Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number three of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, and my very special guest is Marty Leeds. Now, Marty, you know about wormholes, right? Like an Einstein-Rosen bridge? I was just thinking over the break, I wonder if an Einstein-Rosen bridge is just as expensive as an Eckhart toll bridge.
Okay. I have nothing to say. You okay. Damn puns, man. They're cold in my tracks.
Oh, they're just freaking relentless. In fact, if anybody's listening to the show and on the blog archive and what have you, could you actually just leave comments in the the audio archive to just tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 just how bad my freaking puns are? You know, are they something that make you cringe and hate me or something of that? You'd be forgiven for both. Okay, well, anyway, we wanted to talk about legalese. Now, it's not an Asian language from the country Legal. It is, in fact, a language with which the laws are written. And it's a very, very interesting thing because it's not English, all right? It ain't English. For example... Here's a better example. Do you understand that it's not English? Now, if I'm telling you that in English, it means, do you comprehend? Is it something that you know? And then you go, yes, I do. But if I was speaking legalese to you, it understand means, do you stand under my authority? Mm-hmm. Now, you'll notice every time a cop busts you for something, he'll accuse you of a crime and then say, do you understand? If you say, no, I don't understand, he goes, damn it. Are you sure you don't understand? And you're like, yes, I'm sure I don't understand at all, Mr. Officer, sir. I don't have 3 bags full of wheat, you know, in the bar black sheep sense of the word. And he won't be able to do anything if you don't understand his authority. Isn't that great? They ask you every single time before they bust you. And I see him on these cop shows and whatnot before my TV got cut off and I couldn't be bothered getting it reconnected because TV is just basically, as Bill Hicks said, I'm taking a big fat black magic marker and covering up your third eye with it. But yeah, that's what they do. And all these people, I believe that you're driving drunk. Do you understand? Yes. Okay, now you're arrested. It's just like right away, instantly. And as soon as you understand legalese, you start to see the depth of the corruption itself. Yeah. The corruption will give you a conniption. I think that's about right.
And if you say that you don't understand, at least now, cops don't even care. They'll just tase you and drag you out of your car or whatever. You know, so it's like even that is, we've surpassed that now with this police state, which is just really, yeah, sickening.
You kind of have two choices. You can either give up your own personal sovereignty and authority and give it to the police, who will arrest you, charge you, then you get convicted and or thrown in jail. Or you can retain your sovereignty, get tased, get beaten, then thrown in a police cell, get tortured, and then go to court, and then get let off. Those are your choices. Doesn't seem like a very nice choice, eh?
You know, and when people are trying to... You know, people are trying to make moves right now to, like, you know, expose all of this stuff, right? Expose the legalese, expose the, you know, the falsehoods and of, you know, the fallacies of the IDs and things like that, the fallacy of the IRS and things like that. And, you know, the thing is like, you can stand alone and try to fight these people, and more than likely you are going to lose. And this is why I think that it really comes down to the fact of coming together and making a stand en masse. You know, because if I don't pay my taxes this year, I'm going to have an IRS beat down my door. They're going to take my stuff. You know, they're going to, you know, charge me with, you know, financial servitude and yada, yada, yada. Right. But if we can come together at one point and say, look, we're redeclaring our independence. We're redeclaring our independence. It's not that we don't believe in maybe a constitution or whatever. We don't believe in all of these things, whatever. You know, I don't want to go too far with this. But all I want to say is there's enough people out there that know that there's an absolute corruption that has infiltrated all of these different governments, and that we need to come together and make a stand and let the government know. That's what that's what our founding fathers did in this country anyway. I don't want to get too much into this, but they came together and declared their independence from a tyrant, from a despot. You know what I mean? And we're in that position right now that, you know, you know, of course, our founding fathers in the United States, there's, you know, untold wars, and I mean, our flag is stained with the blood of the past. You know, I'm not trying to paint these guys as saints or anything like that. But the one thing that they did do was they came together and they declared their independence, saying, no, no more. And they did it en masse. And we need to do that right now, because if you don't carry your ID and you get pulled over, you're screwed. You don't pay taxes, you're screwed. You say that, oh, I don't understand, you're screwed. You're going to get beat by the cops. And so we need to, and my opinion on this is to, literally pick a date, use all of these different, your show, all these different podcasts, all these people that are online, Facebook, and make a grand statement and say no more. And it's going to happen on, I don't know, July 4th or whatever, you know? Maybe that's unrealistic. Maybe that's a little idealistic, maybe. But at the same time, we've had a history of where they've done it before, so.
Oh, yeah. leaders, okay? Do you like to have a leader, Marty? I don't think so. You like to be your own leader, right? Same with me.
Marty leads.
Of course.
Sorry, I tried to add into the jokes.
Oh my god, Marty's actually like joining in. I've infected him with my incredibly lame pun manufacturing ability. Okay, now this is what happens when you have a really good leader. Leaders can bring people together, they can stop people being divided, and they can make things happen via the support of people behind them, using them as a lightning rod to draw countless more to their cause. Leaders can also manipulate, deceive, deprive people of their personal power and sovereignty. They can also divide other people, and they can also destroy everything that they say that they are there to build. Okay? Now, I think because the latter type of leader has become far more prominent in modern society, it's made people not believe that there is a good leader left of any kind. Right? Now, I consider myself a leader in the truth movement here in New Zealand. I know a number of other people do. However, leadership comes with a lot of responsibilities, right? And most people, maybe even including myself, don't want those responsibilities. We only want to be responsible for ourselves. And this is the irony. We need people who don't want power to be in power to prevent those people who do from taking away our power in general.
Or
what a freaking paradox.
Yeah. Or everybody becomes the leader. You know what I mean? When I say like get together in en masse and declare your independence, you don't need a leader. You know, you certainly don't need me. You don't need you. All you need to do is have people say that we don't need those leaders anymore. We will lead ourselves. Mm. This is honestly when you get into the original breakdown of the Constitution.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no central government. There is no IRS. There is no central bank. There is no. In fact, I think one of the lines in the Constitution that says that the Congress shall meet at least once a year. It's like, they're saying that, hey, everybody, you're just going to stay at home, but you have to meet once a year. Not there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It's like, hey, man, go home. You're not, according to the Constitution, you're supposed to meet at least once a year. So, I mean, and I don't want to get too much into the Constitution because it's controversial. I know that. But, you know, I mean, that's the idea of leading. I think everyone, it becomes the leader. This is the idea of having your creator-given sovereign rights.
Yeah.
You become the leader. You become the leader.
And now, I came up with a 360 brainwashing philosophy. What if you
I'm not good with numbers.
Yeah. Well, it's actually 360 is just a full circle, all right? You come full circle. That's what it means. 360 brainwashing. So you use brainwashing techniques in order to brainwash people into realizing that they're being brainwashed so that they go full circle and they realize, oh my God, I'm totally brainwashed. And that way it'll actually allow them to wake up from it. Right? It's like using the weapons of the enemy against him. You get stabbed with a spear, pull it out of your own body and shove it through his eye socket. You know? That kind of thing. This an inability to accept failure, I think, is one of the strongest points in human beings. You'll see somebody who's downtrodden again and again and again, yet they do not get mired in their failure. They keep going forever, if necessary, until they achieve their success, because they know that what they're fighting for is worth all of that failure. Much like trying to invent a light bulb 100 times is a hell of a lot worth it, because, hey, you wind up inventing a frickin' light bulb, don't you? And you change the world. That's what people have got to realize, is it's not just about leading and brainwashing and power and exposing the scumbaggery and all of that kind of stuff. It's about just not admitting failure, or rather not being resigned to it. Like, for example, I have a certain degree of resignation to failure. And it's like this. Somebody asked me once, Vinny, what are you doing? What you're doing with all the overarching scumbaggery and everything? You know, you're probably going to lose. And I go, well, I accept that I'll probably lose. But the problem with that is I have a moral obligation for victory. So I don't give up. You know, regardless of whether or not I'm going to lose eventually, I will not force myself to lose. It has to be something that will either end my life or end my ability to speak. Somebody will cut out my voice box. And even if they do that, I'll still get one of those little things and just go, good evening, everybody. I'm Vinny Eastwood, and I'm going to teach you how to expose scumbaggery.
Yeah, failure is just a stepping stone to higher understanding. You know, it's just I think it was Henry Rollins that said, half of your life is failing and the other half is dealing with it, in respect. I mean, I don't know how many times I've sat down and tried to write a song and, you know, didn't get to it, or I wrote some hot steaming pile of crap. But then out of 50 failures, there was the one that was really, really good. You know, that I was really proud of, that I was, you know, with no ego whatsoever to look at it and say, hey, man, and that one song was worth the 50 failures before because just how great it was. And so that's one of the, I think, one of the great lessons that human beings have to learn, that don't fear your failures, you know, embrace them, you know, because everybody fails, everybody screws up, you know.
Yeah, and being wrong is a form of failure that people avoid, and in fact, I actually love being wrong. I actually prefer to be wrong over being right, because when I'm right, I've actually learned nothing. When I'm wrong, I have learned something valuable, so I can stop being so wrong. Okay, that's why I value being proven wrong. That's why I value people who have evidence that contradicts the things that I think, because if what I'm thinking isn't true, and I hold on to that belief, so much is the worse for me. And I believe Mark Twain said, when an honest man is confronted with the truth that he is wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, I love that quote. Yeah, I love that one. Yeah, for sure. Not only admitting that you're wrong, but admitting that you don't know. I think this is really important. In fact, I would say the first time I was on the show, I was talking and you didn't know a word that I said. And you stopped me and asked me. I think you're like one of the first people that in the last like year that's ever done that. Most people will just act like they know or be like, well, I don't want to think that I'm, you know, he thinks that I'm stupid or something like that. And it's like, no, man, if you don't ask, then how are you going to know? And if you just stop and ask the question, then it's all like, then all of a sudden that's not you not knowing anymore. That's just you recognizing that, hey, you know, that's the next step to being a more understanding, more intelligent, brighter person. You know, so that, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I've been on a bunch of podcasts, and I guess maybe they understand what I'm saying. I'm not the most well-spoken person in the world, but that's, I honor that. I mean, I think that's honorable that you stop and be like, wait a second, what does that even mean? You know, I think that's, we need to do that. You know, we need to embrace those qualities.
Mm. Well, I have two favorite and hated phrases, and they're three words each. Most hated phrase is, I don't care. All right. Yeah. You know, as soon as somebody doesn't care, they've basically just said, I'm voiding all humanity within myself. I friggin' hate that. My three favorite words are, I don't know, because it implies that you've actually got some form of humility left. It implies that you are actually intelligent enough to realize that you don't know everything.
Yeah, there's something very humbling about educating yourself, just being growing up and educating yourself in general. I think it was Voltaire, I want to say, that said something to the effect of, the more you know, the more you realize that you can't know, and the more you realize you don't know. So whenever I see somebody that acts like they're all high and mighty and that they're so intelligent above everybody, that just proves to me that that's just so much that you really, really don't know. Because I know that. I mean, I've read, you know, I don't know, thousands of books or hundreds of books, whatever. I've done a lot of introspection, contemplation, documentaries, all that stuff. And at the end of the day, there is so much that I am completely, you know, I have no idea about. And I think that's very humbling, You know, I think, and the pursuit of education in one way is very humbling, because it's like, okay, I mean, there's no, in a human lifetime, you can't understand everything. You just can't, you know? And so I think that's once again, another important lesson. So
Now there's another element between the New World Order agenda is to become post-human, to be technologically advanced. Now, with the internet, it actually is possible to know almost everything. I mean, imagine if you had a chip in your brain that had the entirety of the internet accessible. That would be about as close as a human being could come to knowing everything at any one time, wouldn't it?
In a material dimension, I guess you could say. Yeah. I'm not really big on the transhumanism thing.
Me neither. I think as soon as you think that being human is not good enough, that's when you start to dehumanize others.
Yeah, and I mean, my thing is, it's like, okay, well, even if transhumanism, even if that's on the horizon, right? Even if that's the case, it's like, I don't trust the companies that are going to, I mean, would you trust Microsoft to put in a new frontal lobe for you? I mean,
trust Microsoft to put in a new earlobe for me.
Yeah, no kidding, right? You know, I mean, that's the thing that's the most scary. I mean, you want to talk about Skynet, right, from Terminator 2, right? I mean, you want to talk about Skynet. I mean, putting microchips
there actually
and things like
is.
That. And,
there actually yeah. is a Skynet. DARPA made it up.
Yeah, exactly.
So. You can't make this stuff up. And here's another thing, ladies and gentlemen. If you're watching movies and what have you, and you start getting freaked out by the possible futures and what have you in sci-fi films, I've got news for you. You will get more truth out of those movie studios like 20th Century Fox than you will out of Fox News.
Yeah, a lot of art actually reflects is in one way prophetic. It, you know, reflects the future. I mean, I think that's a pretty consistent theme as well. You know, I mean, how many years ago did we see? Once again, you were talking about 1984, right? He was an artist that came out, an author, right? And now we're living in that. You know,
well,
so
the,
and that
the,
was
the book 1984 was written in 1948.
Right?
Yeah, so all he did was reverse the numbers. It wasn't talking about a date or anything like that. He was talking about the mentality. And you know, I realize the fact that I was born in 1984 on the 29th of December, so I actually only saw like 2 days, 2-3 days tops of the year 1984, but I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, I have lived my entire life in the concept of 1984.
Yeah. And how many people are absolutely bereft of this, have no idea about this, you know what I mean? How many people applaud the NSA? How many people applaud, you know, I got a friend who just got his, I love him dearly, he's my best friend, just greatest guy in the world, but he just got a Swiss citizenship card, and he was all excited about it. I'm like, all you did is become a government employee. That's all you did. And he has no idea about that, you know? Mm. And he was really excited because he's 100% Swiss and stuff. And he's a great guy, intelligent guy too. But he's a lot of times, my own peers are not exposed to this stuff. And that's why I'm trying to do everything I can, you know? And it's.
Yeah. Well, you know what the real crux of the issue is? All complicated issues have often simple realizations or simple problem-solving things that you can come to. I think it's the fact that we're trying to control other people. We're trying to control what other people think, what other people do, and what have you. And at the end of the day, it's because we've forgotten the fact that we're not even in control of our own lives. And in order to subvert and make ourselves forget that really terrible realization, we try and put it onto everybody else. And that's government in a nutshell. That's the legislation in a nutshell. That's the judiciary in a nutshell. Is that everybody's wrong, doesn't know what they're talking about, and out of an effort to prevent themselves from being found out in that way, they make sure that everybody else becomes just as stupid, just as controlled, and just as dependent as they are, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, we've just abdicated our personal responsibility, and again, those two words, I love those two words. Mark Passio gave me these, moral obligation. Love that, Shiite Muslim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look. What kind of a life are you living if there ain't no morality involved in it? You know? I mean, somebody without morals being in control of, I don't know, your city, your life, or your county or whatever, what happens to all of those things? They get destroyed, don't they? Morality is kind of like the glue that holds our social fabric together. And I believe the New World Order is has one of its agendas is to destroy morality in and of itself. It's a self-replicating organism, morality is. You know, you raise a child with moral means, that child will grow up to be a moral parent. It's like that. And the same thing is with a lack of morality. If you beat your children or put them in pedophile cults or something of that nature, that child will replicate those things on their own children as well. And I think we're approaching a point in history now that may or may not be unlike any other. I haven't seen any other point in history like this, where technology, as Ian Wishart, who wrote the book Totalitaria, has said, has come to the point that any dictator who does want to control the world in real time, the technology now exists to do that. This is the first time. This is the first time in living memory that this has been possible.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but the technology exists at the same time to do the direct opposite, to give independence to the entire world at the same time, and it's like it's a race. Okay, the human beings are the hare. And the New World Order is the tortoise. The tortoise has been very, very steadily going along that racetrack. And at the very, very end, they win. And not only do they win now, but they win forever. They will set up a system which is completely irresistible. Nobody will ever be free, ever again, in the entirety of history. Impossible. They will be too well suppressed. We're the hare who took a rest under the tree, and while our eyes were closed, an entire society was built up around us, and we are now aware that the tortoise is near the finish line, and we're simply running, hoping that we get across it first.
Yeah, and education is the true power behind all of this. When you educate people, you know, because that's when people are educated, and they're woken up. Yeah, that you can't control these people, you know, But the idea of waking up and the idea of the spiritual context of this, you know, this is recognizing once again your own sovereignty, you know, that you control your vessel. This is your body. No one is your authority. The only authority is, I mean, you basically have three authorities, if you will, your parents, the great creator, and yourself. Why are your parents your authority? Because they authored you. Why is the great creator your authority? Because it authored you. Why are you your authority? Because you author your life, you know? And so when you wake up to this knowledge, there's somebody that claims authority over you in any sort of way is just a complete and utter falsehood. It's just false. Because by, once again, going right to the very definitions of the word. And this is, honestly, this is what true spirituality is. This is what, honestly, what the true religions are talking about. Because when you look at Buddha, Buddha just means the one who woke. That's all it means. What do you think he woke up to? He woke up to realizations such as this. We live in a different time frame, of course. We live in a different time period. But the same things were happening in 500 BC that were happening in 500 AD that are happening in, you know, right now. Mm. And so we're in the same position that everybody in history has always been. It's always been this fight between good and evil. And you got to decide, you know, what side are you going to be on? Mm.
And here's the problem, though. But and again, the difference between this point in history and any other is they now have the tools to finish the job, right? It's kind of like it's the first time that it's possible to have a once and for all, evil wins or good wins.
Yeah, I mean, Mother Nature is going to reclaim everything. You know what I mean? You know, that's how Mother Nature works. Nothing ever lasts. You know what I mean? So when we were talking about transhumanism, we talk about the internet and things like that. And people, you know, they look 100 years in the future and be like, oh, we're going to merge with machines and things like that. Yeah, maybe that might happen. I don't know. I'm not prophetic in any way. But I will say this, that eventually this thing will fall. This thing will fall because that's just how Mother Nature works. Nothing ever lasts. I mean, can you name one civilization from 2500 BC that's the exact same civilization as it is now? No, all of those civilizations fell. The Greeks, you know, the Romans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is going to fall too. So what we have to do as in this moment of time is make our mark where we can. So, you know, if it ever does fall or, you know, like you said, if the power control and the power structure increases as it is, that people will be educated and then we can make that fight, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. Well, and I think this is actually the very reason why the New World Order seized control of religious and educational institutions, is to indoctrinate people into believing the exact opposite of what's real. And in so doing, that's what fallacy means. It comes from fallare, to mean to lie. It means that almost everything that they're trying to teach you, appeal to authority, is one of the known logical fallacies. And guess what everybody appeals to in a crisis? Oh, the authorities will save us. Oh, right. So the people who lie to you and destroy your life invariably throughout the entirety of history are the people that are going to save you now. Is that what you think is going to happen? You know?
Yeah, and this thing with authority, too, and the idea of recognizing one's own spirituality, I think is a really important point in looking at all the laws. I think we were going to talk about this earlier in the break. I kind of want to hit in on this, but we're kind of getting into it right now, is the idea of covering, because since you just got married and being authority, who's your authority? The great creator, the great spirit, the great mystery, yourself and your parents until you become, you know, an adult or whatever.
You're actually, I thought my authority was my great missus.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, exactly. I guess you have four authorities, right? It's like what was that thing I heard? I have three bosses: my old lady, the God above, and Bruce Springsteen.
Because anyway, he's literally the boss.
He's the boss. Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Talking about authority, right? The idea is when we're talking about getting married, right? Like you just got married and you didn't sign any documents and you're not getting married to the government. When you think about this spiritually, right? Okay, two people get together and they're in love with each other, and then they have to go get a marriage license, which is a license, which is a permit, right? When you think about this in a spiritual context, right? The idea is that how do I go into this? In Hinduism, right, you have this term that says it's namaste, right? It's this greeting that they say in India. And, of course, this has been developed in the West as well. Namaste means nam, which is name, and aste means star, right? So it's basically saying, what's your name? You're a star. Now, we know we're born from stardust, right? Carl Sagan said, what is he? The DNA, the nitrogen in our DNA, the calcium in our teeth, the carbon in our apple pies. We're made in the center of collapsing stars. We are made of star stuff, right? Well, spiritually, this idea of namaste is recognizing that what you do is you say namaste to a person, and then you bow your head. And that other person bows their head and says, namaste. And what you're doing is recognizing that you have inside your heart is the small ounce of fire of the scintilla of the creator within your heart. And that's where it exists. It's in your heart. And this is the creator gave you this, right? Once again, your authority gave you this. Now, when two people come together, whether they're gay or straight or whatever, what are they doing? They're coming together and they're saying in front of their friends, their family, in front of God or the great Wiccan Witch of the West or Mother Gaia or whatever it is, they're saying in front of, making this proclamation in front of the entire universe, that they're saying, see this person here? I'm committed to that person. Death do us part. I'm going to be there to the very end. And that other person's saying, I'm committed to that person too. And so what are you doing when you come together in this act of love, in this act of marriage, in this act of communion? You're giving, you're saying, this piece, this scintilla of this spark in my heart, I'm giving this to this other person. That person is giving it to me, right? And you're doing this, and because God, if you will, gave this to you. Now, before you do that, you got to go get a permit from the government. So you're about to proclaim in front of all your friends and all your family, the entire universe and God himself, that you want to give your soul to another human being. And what does the government say? Well, not first. First you got to get a permit or a license for me. This is the thing that I really want to address to, lesbian and gay people. Don't ask for permission to get married. Don't ask for permission to get married. Don't go pleading to the government for the right to get married. You have the right. You have the right that was given to you by your creator. If you want to go get married, get married. Hey, I'm a minister at the Universalist Life Church. I got it online. I can marry anybody I want. I'll marry you right now. I don't care what state it's in. I don't care, man, because that is absolutely ridiculous. You know what I mean? This is something that, whether we talk about corruption, politics, anything like that, why in the world is the government have anything to do with love? You know, this is an absolute travesty. It's absolutely absurd. And this is something that is very close to my heart and why I'm not married.
Hmm.
So,
well, technically, I'm not legally married.
Yeah.
We had a common law marriage and no paperwork. We said before God and all of our guests and everybody around us, we're married now. Sarah Eastwood, Vinny Eastwood, Mr. and Mrs. There's no legal documentation, because I don't believe in that stuff. What I do believe is in the power of my promise and the power of the promise of my wife to honour and keep each other, right? That is the only thing that matters. Anybody else says that a piece of paper is more valuable than a man and a wife's honour to commit to each other is full of crap.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, this is something that should just be addressed. And once again, when I hear of these arguments with like gays and lesbians, I mean, I guess Uruguay, they just signed some thing that said that if you get married or that you're lesbian or gay, that I don't know what it is. Like you get fined or something or jail time or I forget what it is. It's just something crazy, you know? And it's just like,
isn't
why?
It interesting that a country that whose name sounds remarkably like you are gay would do something like that? You can't make this stuff up, folks.
Yeah. It's like the it's like that guy Anthony Weiner that got caught showing his wiener.
I know.
Like the government. I mean, like the cosmos is playing these like crazy funny games with us or something like that. You know, it's just nuts.
Yeah. Does anybody think that the universe is just messing with me, man?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you're playful with this stuff too, because I honestly think that there's, I mean, I know this is going to draw some laughter, but I think there's some legitimacy in romanticizing and poeticizing and looking at things like that romantically. I mean, you know what I mean? Looking at things like in a poetic sense, like Uruguay, and they just passed a law that says you can't be gay. You know, Anthony Weiner showing his wiener. You know what I mean? It's like we live in this kind of like Coen Brothers film or something. But when you look at a guy like, let's talk about Mark Passio, for instance. I was just thinking about this today. Mark Passio, in his name, he's filling out his own archetype. Look at what he's doing. What is he doing? What do you do when you mark something? You make your mark, right? You make your mark on this world. And how is he doing it? With passion? All you did is throw an N at the end. Now, that's silly. That's ridiculous, some people think. I don't think so. I don't, especially when you talk about when we started this whole conversation with saying God, the tetragrammaton, is in our language. Mm. Is it so absurd to think that this being, that all of these people, I'm just going to tell you my honest opinion, that this is my experience with this, that's exactly what it is. That it's this creative natural force that is interpenetrating and working with our language. Yeah. You know, that's just,
well,
so.
And incidentally, adding on to that, when I was interviewing Mark Passio, my wife brought home some toilet paper whose brand name was Passio, Paseo. It wasn't spelled the same, but yeah. And we were talking about bullshit. And again, you can't make it up.
I know. I mean, like I said, I know this kind of is going to draw some laughter. It's be like, oh, this is kind of ridiculous and stuff. But when you get into this sort of magical, mystical mindset, you know, you'll start seeing things like that all the time. And you can just, you know, blow them off and say, oh, it's just your imagination. Yeah, maybe it is. What you're saying, that's not valid. I would say that all the alchemists and hermeticists and great philosophers of the past said that's absolutely valid. You know, so that's, you know, just, you know, something to think about for people that have never thought about that before anyway.
Yeah. And incidentally, when we're talking about this right now, it's exactly 33 minutes into the third hour.
I know. I just did this podcast. It was a Sync Book Radio podcast. And I was
Alan Abadesa.
Actually, I'm doing his show Thursday with Scott Onstott, by the way. So,
oh, yeah. Scott's awesome. Yeah,
Scott's a great guy. Yeah. So anyway, I did this podcast and I was on the podcast to talk about 1111, right? And I was on the podcast that was the number 121. It was the 121st podcast and I didn't know that. And we just talked about it on the air because none of us recognized it. Well, 1111, I was talking about 1111, 1111, 11 times 11 is 121. And I just happened to be on the 121st podcast talking about 1111. It's things like that. That show up all the time. You're talking about 33, right? You moved into the apartment 33. You have your desk at 33. I just did Red Ice Creations yesterday, and I had written this down because I wanted to talk about it, but we didn't get a chance to do it. Red Ice Creations, I was Red Ice in the cipher is R-E-D-I-C-E is 554, red, and then ice is 535. Well, this is the numbers 14 and 13. So reading this backwards is 3141, right? So it's pi. So, and they, of course, they didn't know about any of this stuff. This is just pi. We find the same phenomenon in the alphabet. There's a bunch of different words like this that have 3141. Now, of course, Red Ice Creations, Henrik met a girl named Lana and got married to her. And she was born on 314. And of course, she started a podcast that's called Radio 314. And then they moved to South Carolina, I think it is. And they moved into a place that was, the address was 314. And I said, you know, I was thinking about this. I wanted to talk to him about it. But so I'm glad we're kind of bringing this up right now. But to me, it's like, okay, that's all just coincidence. Maybe. Or maybe there's an underlying order that we just don't understand because we are not using our imaginations.
Well, and that's why actually it's good that you brought up the Sync book and Alan Ebenezer Green, because he helped me to realize that there is a hell of a lot more than coincidence at work here, that synchronicity is merely looking at meaningful coincidence. It is a coincidence, sure, but it doesn't mean that coincidence is without meaning. And I think that's the essence of synchronicity, is that actually you can derive meanings from coincidences that are very accurate sometimes.
Yeah, and I think one of the easiest ways to, just like you said with like the number 7 and number 33, and this is the exact experience that I've had dealing with this information, I think that the easiest way to see coincidences in your life is to get into numbers, because numbers are all over us. I mean, we're surrounded by them all the time, and most people shun numbers. They cringe at numbers. They cringe at mathematics. Thank you to our wonderful school system for that. And when you actually get into this, you realize you don't start seeing numbers as just numbers or equations or anything. You start seeing them as a language. Just like when you read a book, you don't read the letters. You don't read the words. You're reading the story. When you get into the language of mathematics, you start reading, if you will, the story of our universe.
What this reminds me of is one night I was at my computer and I was going to process a video, then go to bed. Okay, so it tells you how many minutes the video's got left to process. And it says exactly 33 minutes left to process. And I go, okay. And then I'm walking back towards the bedroom and I go past the washing machine that's going, that has how many minutes left to go until it's finished its cycle? 33 minutes. And then I get in bed and look at my alarm clock radio and it's 3:33 in the morning.
That's funny.
You know? And I was just laughing to myself. This classic, man.
Yeah. And so how many kind of like reductionist, mechanistic scientists would look at that and just be like, oh, that's just ridiculous. It's just coincidence. There's no meaning there. There's no meaning to life and things like that. And at one point in my life, I would have said the exact same thing. But now, dealing with numbers for so long, it's like that idea, because I mean, I've had things like that, like you were just talking about, that stuff goes on hourly. I mean, I'm not even joking, man. That stuff happens all the time where it's just like I'll be thinking of something, like I'll be literally doing mathematics, and I was like, hey, I came up with the number 123, and I'll look at the clock, and it'll be 123. You know, things like that where you're just like, okay, any other number could have came up in what I'm working with, but it didn't. Hmm. And it came up at that exact point, and that happens all the time.
Somebody trying to explain that to me is, if you buy a particular type of car that you don't see very often, but as soon as you buy that car and as soon as you're driving around in it, you notice that it's everywhere. There's heaps of different cars like that, absolutely everywhere. And I think that actually does work as well, but it doesn't explain absolutely everything. It's almost like we have, as human beings, endowed with certain abilities to, in fact, change the very fabric of reality to suit what it is we want or what it is we expect. And I don't know exactly what the mechanism is, but we are actually capable of changing what is to fit our ideas. It's just occasionally people get it mixed up and they think that you can change everything that is with your own ideas, and that nothing matters, and that means everything is just a result of your perception, which is just solipsism, as Mark Passio explains, which is BS. If anything... how did I explain this? Oh, yeah. You know the double helix DNA? Okay. Oh, yeah. Imagine one strand down the side, down one rotating part of the spiral is reality, and the other strand rotating around the spiral is perception. Together, they're capable, with reality and perception working together, to create totally different DNA, totally different people, and absolutely everything that exists. You know, it doesn't mean one dominates the other. It's that one cannot exist without the other.
Yes, and I think this is really an elevation of consciousness when you really talk about it. When you talk about seeing, you know, seeing a car and then all of a sudden you see cars all the time. Seeing numbers and all of a sudden you see, you know, numbers all the time. I think this is an actual expansion of our consciousness. It's how we can actually interpret and change our reality through our own mechanism of mind. Speaking of Scott Onsatt, he brought up this really great point. I remember I forget what he was talking about, but he was talking about that when he would go hunting for mushrooms in the forest, he'd look and he'd look and he'd look and he wouldn't find any. And then he'd find one. And then all of a sudden he saw them everywhere. You know what I mean? It's the same kind of thing. And it's the same thing with numbers. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with corporate logos and things like that. When you start to understand what, you know, how the same themes, same elements, as soon as you start seeing one, you're going to start seeing them all over, and then you're going to see, oh, there's some connectivity there, I believe, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of things, or at least the most important things in life, are usually cruel ironies of some description. I recall a friend of mine, he was studying the effects of cannabis on the brain, heavy cannabis use, and what he found in his subjects was that their IQ was increasing, but it was at the cost of their short-term memory. So they're having all these really brilliant ideas, but would forget that they'd have them.
So the moral of the story is, stoners, write stuff down, man.
Yeah. We have recording devices. Okay. I mean, why do you think I record all my shows, man? You know?
Sorry.
Now, the other element here as well is having fun. Okay, if you're not having fun in your life, you know what the hell's the point? I'm sure many people have come to that philosophical conclusion of their own. However, a lot of times you'll find that life just ain't fun, man. And you actually have to use your imagination and you have to make stuff up in order to make those things fun. I mean, the show, for example, tagline, the lighter side of genocide. Genocide's not freaking funny, is it? Yeah. At all. And you know what's what it is about things that aren't funny ever at all is that they don't allow humor to be brought into them. So in order to be able to deal with these things, you have to force and create humor where none exists in order to balance the equation. And we've been given that ability. And I think it's a wasteful squandering to take everything too seriously, especially ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're one of the only species that actually laughs. I mean, I think that we are the only species that really can just, you know, belly up and chuckle and laugh. And so I think that that's an integral part, a necessary part of being a human being. This is actually true spirituality. This is what it means. This is spirituality. This has nothing to do with going to church or believing in any sort of BS or adopting any belief system or not being a critical thinker or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Spirituality means to be spirited. That's what it means. To live, to laugh, to love, to have appreciation to your fellow man, to, you know, to have integrity, to be honest, to laugh, to, you know what I mean? Those sorts of things. And enjoy this life. And even when it gets you down. You know, even when you have those failures, it's to stand up and do it again and get to that next point. You know, how many people would, like I said, when talking about writing songs, how many people would pick up a guitar and spend 2 weeks at it and be like, oh, I can't do that, you know, and yet having no idea the amount of joy that learning an instrument can bring you, if you know what I'm saying. You know, this is the key factor, one of the key factors that I try to point out when I'm talking about spirituality. All it is finding your individuality and letting it bloom in full force, you know, letting it, you know, all the laughter out, letting be the warrior of the mind, the heart, the spirit and everything like that. You know, that's true spirituality.
Yeah, I mean, it's like jamming and flowing. You actually, if you come up with a good song off the top of your head with a bandmate or something of that nature, it's like a spiritual experience. Right,
it is a spiritual experience.
You feel something, and it's not like a physical sensation. It's not a mental sensation. It's something more, something deeper.
This is, I think, I try to, as like a singer songwriter, an artist, or whatever. Even when I like write books or when I'm doing any sort of research, this is the space that I try to get into, and it's basically the space where you become a conduit for the creative force within creation, if you will. You become a conduit for it. You're not, and this is well known in like, you know, jam bands or jazz musicians call it real gone. It's where you get to this place where I don't know what song I'm playing. I don't know what key I'm playing in. I don't know even know who I'm playing with. I don't know, you know, et cetera. I don't know what I'm going to play next, but I'm just letting this stuff just flow out of me. And most musicians that I know try to get to this place. I mean, I think like true professional musicians, and I don't know how many people I've heard talk about this, that they're really just kind of interpreting things that they receive from the other or whatever. You know, I've heard, I mean, just tons of musicians. I mean, it could just Tom Waits has talked about this, and you know, I mean, Adam Duritz has talked about this. I mean, it could just go on and on about musicians. And I've heard comedians talk about this, that when they get on stage, they get into this place where they don't, you know, they don't even know what the next thing is coming out of their mouth. They have a, you know, they have their bits and everything like that, but everything's just kind of flowing out. This is the place that I think we want to get to in our whole life. This is the Tao. That's what it's saying. The ever flowing way. You get into that ever flowing way and you just flow with creation. And that's when you, you know, that's when you can really let that, that force come out of you, if you will.
Which is why they named the stock market after it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. Once again, talking about being creative and being imaginative, being artistic with, you know, words and things like that. Do you think that's a coincidence? You think the perversion of such a holy idea of the Tao, and then you find that in our stock market, you think that's a coincidence? I don't think that's a coincidence at all, man.
Mm.
You know?
Well, there's intention behind everything, even if the intention wasn't behind the person doing the thing. And I'll evidence this by talking about the invention of the telescope. Do you know who invented the telescope?
Who's that?
There were 9 guys who invented the telescope. At the exact same night at 9 different places around the earth.
I've heard that. Yeah. Wow. I haven't thought about that in a long time. I've heard that. Yeah. That's interesting. Huh?
Yeah. They were all accusing each other of plagiarizing off each other when none of them knew each other or did anything. And they all had that same idea. It was like an aerial from God or something like that. Just came in. Hey bro, you know that, that really hot naked, Spanish chick in that villa across the way there?
I got a shot of her, man.
I can tell you how to figure out a device where you can get a closer look. Without even getting closer. They're like, oh, yeah. Bro.
The first telescopes were invented for porn.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, necessity is the mother of all creativity, is it?
It was only like 100 years later. It was like, hey, we could use this to look at the stars.
Wait, you could see stars with this too? Oh, that's funny. Well, eh?
Talking about this creative force within creation and letting it flow out, I think that when you're on the path of self-discovery, when you're on the path, when you're you know, a true seeker, and you're going to truly find wisdom and truly find the truth, I think this stuff starts coming into a confluence into your life, if you will. This stuff started happening all around you. We were just talking about Red Ice Creations, right? They didn't know any of that stuff. They didn't know about the cipher for the English alphabet, or they've never, you know, they don't, neither one of those people have, you know, Lana or Henrik or Frederick or any of those guys, I don't think, studied pi or anything like that. Yet everything that surrounded them was the 3141. You know what I mean? And I think, especially when you talk about, you know, mathematics and geometry being the language of a creator, and that doesn't come from my mouth. That comes from the mouth of Plato, Pythagoras, of St. Augustine, Galileo, Kepler. You know, these guys are saying that this creative force is speaking, most often speaking through numbers and geometry. And this stuff just starts, I think, when you get on that path of finding your individuality, this stuff starts blooming in your life, and you can start to notice it, really notice it.
It's kind of like just not ignoring what's there. It's like an increased awareness sort of thing.
Elevation of consciousness.
Now again, this is actually what the institutions, the forced institutions, okay, the ones that you have to obey, okay, police, education, medicine, law, that those kind of things. That's actually, in my opinion, one of the design motifs of these institutions is to constrict and prevent the elevation of consciousness. Would you agree?
Yeah, this goes back to what we're talking about with the advertisers too, about feeding those lower animal natures. You know, the elevation of consciousness comes from the heart up. It's about taking all of these lower animal natures and bringing them up and bringing into your head and illuminating those dormant brain cells and having the elevation of consciousness. And all of those institutions, all of them are all focused on, you know, when you go to the doctor, they're not going to look at your spiritual body or anything like that. They're not concerned with your heart or anything like that. You know, they're not concerned with your consciousness and how you feel and things like that. More often than not, in a lot of these, the big business institutions of medicine, of course, right? They're focused on the bug that's in you. You know, we're going to take care of the physical thing, and that's it. You know, and this is exactly what's going on. And you're absolutely right. I mean, this is all what all of these institutions are doing. They're focusing on those lower animal, carnal, atavistic natures, and trying to keep us down in there. You know, and we don't want to be down. We want to go up. That's why the compass always points up.
Is that the nature of an institution in and of itself? Or could we create institutions that actually encourage creativity, that actually institute the lessons of how to achieve higher consciousness? Would that be possible? Or is that an oxymoron in and of itself?
No, you're an institution, man. My website's an institution in one respect, you know? I mean, it's a place to go to learn new things or get a new perception of reality and that sort of thing. So, I mean, when you look at the mystery schools of old, right, the Platonic schools, the Pythagorean schools, things like this, those were institutions that were trying to, mystical schools that were trying to tell you about the divine within, the God that dwells within, and how to understand that, how to respect it, how to elevate your consciousness. I mean, this is what those schools were. So I think not only can there be institutions surrounding these ideas, but I think that it's honestly a good idea. What you got to know, you got to be aware every single day that it could be infiltrated. And I mean, I think this is what Freemasonry was. And unfortunately, we've already talked about that, what's happened with that. So I don't think institutions in and of itself are bad. Nothing in and of itself. I can't say nothing in and of itself is bad. Don't let me go there. But you know what I'm saying. You know, I think that we can build school systems that actually teach people to understand geometry, understand psychology, understand philosophy, understand the nature of creativity and the nature of the divine.
How about understanding the nature of authority and that it in and of itself, it's a fallacy. That would be interesting to have an institution like that, because only psychos and what have you who crave power and control and authority would attempt to infiltrate an institution that has power and authority. What if one was actually engaged in the point of actually doing the direct opposite?
Yeah. I mean, when
it'd
you
be like
teach
kryptonite,
philosophy,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, when you teach philosophy, when you study philosophy, one of the things you have to study about in philosophy is evil, period. You know, it's not just about rainbows and unicorns and all of that sort of stuff, man. It's understanding that there is a dark underbelly of this current. I mean, the greatest,
the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing humanity it didn't exist. Was that what you were about to say?
Yeah, pretty much. Basically, philosophy, I guess it does. Well, here. I'm just going to show this. I'm sorry for the listeners that are only listening to this. This is a Freemason symbol. It's got the all-seeing eye of God in there. Those two pillars are basically talking about chaos and order, the sun and moon, man and woman,
it's Gog
good
and
evil.
Gog and Magog. No. Boaz and Jachin, I think they're called.
Yeah, Boaz and Jachin, yep. Yeah. Basically, when you understand that there's a unity of opposites in creation, that in order for creation to have been created, in order for us to have this gradation of experience, you need the polarities. And so when you start to understand your own psychology, your left and right brain, your positive and negative electromagnetic vehicle that you are, when you start to understand this, you have to understand both. And this is exactly what Mark Passio is talking about with the right and left brain. People are either left or they're right. You know, it's all good. It's all, you know, it's all new age bliss bunny stuff, or it's all scientism. It's all, you know, that sort of thing. When you get into philosophy, yeah, exactly. When you get into philosophy, you have to put both on the table, good and evil, and you have to deal with both of them and figure out how to navigate, how to balance and center those.
Well, and that comes back to my point that I made in the first hour, is that shutting off half of the hemisphere of your brain or knowledge of good or evil is like a champion runner saying, I've got to run this whole distance, but only using one leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
To amputate that Shiite Muslim. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Marty. And do you have anything final to say before we close up the show for today? Have you got a website or things of that nature?
Yeah, MartyLeads33.com, MartyLeads33 on YouTube. I'm a singer-songwriter, too, so you can go on my site, and I've got a record for sale as well. And then I just released two books, Pie in the English Alphabet, Volume 1, which is the second edition, and then The Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Pavonis. And then the second edition of Volume 2 should be out very soon. I'm thinking like a week or two. So look forward to that. And then I actually just posted a new video today on the Hebrew alphabet and correlating the Hebrew alphabet to the English alphabet using 22 digits of pi. So I post new videos. I try to post new videos. I've been busy with the books, but I try to post videos once every 2 weeks or something like that. So, and I have about maybe like 12 or some more or something like that I've got sketched out that'll be coming up. So all of that stuff, all those videos are free. You can look at all these deconstructions for absolutely free on my website or on YouTube. So check it out. So.
All right. Thank you very much, Marty. And thank you very much. You're welcome. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Bear in mind, just to reiterate, we've just done the numbers, and we need about $900 in order to keep the boat afloat this week alone. So we only have three or four days left before we need to meet those costs. So if you would be generous enough to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate, preferably through the KiwiBank account that is there, because they don't take a percentage like PayPal does, but if you don't have a choice, you don't have a choice. It's all right. Please, ladies and gentlemen, don't let me down. I haven't let you down, have I? I probably have. You know, in fact, I let everybody down all the time. But I've come to accept that. I've come to accept my failings and just, you know, try and work on them. You know, it's a process. All right. Thank you very much, Marty, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again sometime.